Thank you all for being here. We really appreciate it. We're going to be talking about copper spice, which is our GUI library. And during this presentation, we're going to talk about what copper spice is, and we're going to spend some time talking about the advantages of using copper spice as a GUI library. And we're going to talk about the internals and then the future plans of where we're going with copper spice.
We're also going to be talking a bit about how we implemented reflection in C++ 11 to accomplish this, and what signals and slots are and why they're advantageous.
So basically, when you're dealing with C++, we usually always need a user interface. Not always. Ansel does mostly daemon work, but he sees what goes on with a user interface. There's no standard. C++ has not established a standard yet for how to do a GUI. There are several libraries available, and we looked at most of them. We decided back in about 2009 to use Qt. So this was the basis of where I started. As you can see over time, Nokia owned Qt at that time. It has since gone over to Digia. The problem that we had was we were using Qt, and Ansel would watch me. In his daemon work, he would say, well, a user interface would look nice over here. But the problem is he saw the corner cases. He saw the limitations. And he said, well, how do you know not to use that or not to do this thing? It's like, you learn. So we decided this was a bad approach. Let's take a look. It's open source. So let's contribute to Qt. Let's add our ideas and make the product better. That's what we do in open source. Then we ran into a few problems with this.
One of the first things that we discovered was that if you want to contribute to Qt, you have to sign a CLA. I'm not opposed to that in principle, a contributor license agreement. There are many valid reasons why you would have that, and I understand why theirs is structured the way that it is. Unfortunately, we really objected to it. The problem is that when you sign your CLA, you are granting them the perpetual right, binding on all their heirs, to use your source code in whatever way they see fit, up to and including putting it in the closed source version of their product, which is commercial only, and not ever putting it in the open source. Now, I will mention that the current owners of Qt, the Qt company, have no policy of doing this. However, they have the right to do it if they so choose, and there's no way to know what they might choose to do down the road.
It's also an issue if this were ever to be sold to another company, again, which may not happen, but if they did, what would this other entity or this other company do? You are releasing your rights when you sign the CLA. I know it doesn't bother some people. It bothered us. It made us uncomfortable about where our changes were going to end up. One of the other problems that we found was their contributor summit. In the past, it has been invitation only. They may change this. I don't believe that a summit where people are getting together to talk about ideas should be invitation only. I don't think it's that hard to get an invitation, but again, we were uncomfortable. Yeah. So we decided, what else could we do? And we were left with few choices because there were other things we didn't like. One of them is mock. Mock is a code generator. Mock isn't evil, it isn't horrible, it isn't the worst thing, but it doesn't produce true C++ code.
There are other problems in that you can't use in your source code when you are writing something that's going to interoperate with the rest of Qt. You cannot use pieces of C++ that Mock does not understand. And some of these are quite surprising. For example, you cannot have a template that Mock can understand. So templates may not inherit from QObject. They may not interoperate with the rest of the Qt object model. The same is true for nested classes. Mock does not understand them. Therefore, they cannot be QObjects. They cannot interoperate with the rest of the object model.
There's a problem with properties. Properties can't have compound data types because there's a comma. So there's things, problems of using QMap in properties. These are some of the corner cases and some of the limitations.
There's also the issue that this is an additional build step that is required in your build system. Some build systems have support built in for running mock, some do not. And in any case, most of the workarounds tend to be a little hacky in third-party build systems to deal with running Mach.
One of the other problems is in the signal slot mechanism, which we're going to show in a little bit, and how we've changed it. Everything's a void star. And everything that is passed from a signal to a slot has been done as a void star, so you lose all your data types. We have resolved that. One of the other things that's very interesting is the way Qt is built. So it's a complicated process. There is a core library, and the way that core library works is it is used to build Mach. It is also used to build QMake, which is their build system. So they have to build a smaller version of the Qt core library so that they can build Mach and QMake so they can build Qt. The way this is done is with ifdefs, and there's an unbelievable amount of them in core. One of the other problems is that makes changing Qt core a little bit scary, because if you change it, you have to know, are you going to affect Mach or are you going to affect Qt core? It was a complicated process. We got rid of that. By getting rid of Mach, we now don't have the core problem. And a lot of ifdefs went away. So this is what we did. We did fork the project. We did start with Qt 4.8, because that was the stable version at the time. This was back in 2012. Qt 5 came out a bit later, but there was not a stable version for a year and a half. Many people have said, why didn't you start with 5? It wasn't out. That's why we started with 4. But Copper Spice, and I'm going to say this a couple times, it is not Qt 4, it is not Qt 5. It is Copper Spice. We have backported some things from Qt 5, but we're going in a different direction. It's not actually a bad thing. We're actually taking the product and we're advancing where they started. And I really do want to say our hats off to what they did, what Trolltech, Nokia, and Digia have done with this product. But it's older technology and we want to bring it forward to really be a C++ 11 and a future GUI system.
One of the advantages of removing Mach and getting rid of a lot of the build dependencies on that is we're able to use a standard build system. We chose AutoTools because it's what we're familiar with. We have a contributor who's already finished the CMake build files. We're awaiting merging those shortly. It's written in pure C++ 11. It's a standard shared object on Linux. It's a standard DLL on Windows. There's no additional linkage mess that you have to deal with. You can link it right into any C++ application.
We want to be clear because, again, some people said, well, what did you replace Mach with by removing it? C++, C++ 11 to be specific. So everything that was in Mach, we have implemented without requiring Mach. It's not a special compiler, it's not a special stack. Mach is just gone.
So as I've mentioned, we've removed a lot of the limitations, and the advantages of Copper Spice include template classes can inherit from QObject, you have all sorts of complex data type issues that we don't share, you can use any build system you like, we have some container library improvements that we'll tell you a bit more about later in the program. We've removed a lot of obsolete source code for platforms that aren't relevant to the C++ community anymore, things like that. We maintain type information all the way through the entire system. Everything is templated as proper variadic templates.
And for those of you that are familiar with our DoxyPress application, which is a replacement for Doxygen, we took the API for Qt and we refactored it, and we have improved the documentation, which is a continuous operation, and we are making the documentation easier to read and documenting all the pieces. There's pieces that weren't quite documented before, and the way their hierarchy worked, it wasn't always clear where the base class was. So we're constantly making improvements about the API. We also have an overview API for Copper Spice, so we split it in two parts. The overview telling you how to do the builds and some of the changes between Qt and Copper Spice. But the Copper Spice API on its own documents what's in Copper Spice. And here's what's in Copper Spice. This is a set of the libraries. And as you can see, it's more than just core. There's several different pieces that comprise the library. Also, we do want to note that CS is the name of the library. All the methods inside still have the Q. So if you're used to QMAP or QList, we didn't rename those. We just renamed the library. Peppermill is a utility that we wrote. It's a parser. And we needed Peppermill because we've changed some of the syntax in how CopperSpice works. And in the process of changing that syntax, we needed a way to automate the process to convert all the libraries. We also took Peppermill and we released it out as part of our packaging. So if you're on Qt and you want to move to CopperSpice, Peppermill is what you can run. It's very quick. You can do the changes by hand, but why bother? We have Peppermill and that will allow you to do the changes.
So what was required to make CopperSpice happen? Quite a lot out of C++ 11. We ended up having to use type traits, enable if, expressionist fine, in a decal type, const expr, lambda functions, the whole bag of tricks that came along with C++ 11. A large amount of variadic templates in many places. We can support GCC 4.7.2 or greater because it has full support for C++ 11. On Windows, our supported platform is the MinGW toolchain, either 32 or 64-bit. And we also support Clang 3.4 or greater on its various platforms. We cannot, at this time, support MSVC, even the current version, MSVC 15, because it's missing expression as fine. It's only got partial support for initializer lists, and it has some issues with const expr. We do keep watching where they're going with this, and hopefully sometime soon they will release a C++ 11 compliant compiler, and then we'll be able to investigate supporting CopperSpice on it.
And this is something we're watching, and even in the earlier presentation today, talking about S-Fine not being there in MSVC. We're watching it, we're checking. As soon as Microsoft adds that, we can bring it up so that you can use it with CopperSpice. So the question is, what problem did Mach solve? Because if you ask that question, then you can say, what did we need to add? And what Mach solved is it added reflection. That is a lot of what it added. There is a reflection committee. They're looking at adding reflection to C++. It probably won't make it into 17, even though they would like to. There's some questions about it, and it's not quite there. There has to be some definitions of what does reflection do. So we didn't want to wait until reflection gets added in sometime in the next 5 or 10 years. We have talked with some of the Qt people. Their aim is to get rid of Mach. They do want to, but their aim is in 10 years because they want to wait until it's been added to C++. This was not, again, the direction we wanted to go. We wanted to get rid of it now.
So let's take a side trip for a moment and talk about what reflection is and why it's important. There's a very primitive form of reflection that's in C++, even going back to, I believe, 98. The RTTI system, the runtime type information. This is embeds in a class the bare minimum that's needed to support dynamic cast and the type ID operator, which is extremely primitive and has almost no information in it. What we really want is a more general introspection and reflection mechanism, the ability to examine and manipulate your methods, your members, your properties at runtime, query a class for information about itself at runtime. This is used all throughout the entire CopperSpice system. It's used to implement signals and slots, as I mentioned, properties, which act much like a data member, but with additional semantics. It's used to get information about enums and their values. There's such a thing as an invocable constructor. There are a large amount of things that C++ programmers only have access to with compile time information that's available at runtime in the Qt meta object system.
So what are signals and slots? Most people have used similar things as a signal and a slot. We wanted to make sure it made sense. A signal is a notification. A slot is just a method. in Qt and in CopperSpice, what we have is a connection is made. We're associating a signal with a slot, and a signal can actually be associated with many different slots. Boost signals have some problems.
The boost signals library is great. I've used it on other projects, but it has a couple of behaviors that don't work for this use case. The fact that each signal is represented as a separate object, so that it could stand alone outside of a class in their model, means that each signal has a size, which means adding a signal to a class changes the size of that class, which means you cannot add signals without breaking binary compatibility with older versions of your library. This is a very important thing for people who want to maintain stable interfaces but be able to add functionality as their library grows. And the other problem is that boost signals, although it does come in a thread-safe version, even in the thread-safe version, it has no notion of cross-thread communication. So a slot will be invoked only on the thread that emitted the signal, whereas in this system, the signal can be marshaled and sent across threads to another object living on a separate thread, which is a very nice mechanism for doing cross-thread communication.
In the signal slots, basically we have a signal, you press a button, then there's a mouse event. The mouse event is processed. And then what happens is clicked is emitted as a signal. There's a difference between what they do in Qt 4 and 5 and what we do in CopperSpice. In Qt 4 and 5, all this information that is stored in mock, some of it's in string tables, but there's a lot of reinterpret casts. There's a lot of stuff that's going on in mock. It's the underlying system. Activate is an array of void stars. Again, this is stuff we wanted to remove. In CopperSpice, everything is made by using macros in terms of the setup, and there's a full parameter list, so we don't lose anything. And activate, I'm going to take 1 second and ask Ansel to change the slides because I can see we have a small issue here. We also seem to be missing the slide numbers. So I'm going to apologize while he fixes this and brings up the right set of slides that were modified so it fits. But activate in ours is a variadic template. That's how we do this. So we do this by using a variadic template so we can keep all the type information.
Thank you.
What we're showing here is sample mock code. This is generated code.
And I don't know about you, but I know that there are cases in which reinterpret cast is well defined in the standard, but I still don't like seeing it in code in my program.
This is actually Qt 5 code. This is actually mock generated. Okay. Yes, I do understand. What this slide is it's showing, though, that the clicked method, the Q push button clicked method that you see up here, that is the method that is generated. So no matter how you get there, no matter how you've made the connections from your signal and slot, this is the code that will run. What we wanted to show, and we're going to show part of how we do it, this particular then clicked. As you can see, it uses the reinterpret cast and the void star. So that's what we wanted to really just show here, that that's how it is done. Again, our code doesn't generate with the reinterpret cast and passing the void stars because we're keeping all the data types.
So we have to solve the problem that mock did. And the way we do that is by registering the signal and slot data. We do this using macros from your header file. And then at runtime, lazily, the registration methods that we've set up are called on demand to set up the metadata that's needed.
Go ahead.
When you make a connection between a signal or a slot, you can specify either method by name. You can specify them as strings. And this is the older form, but it's quite useful in some cases if you have a piece of code implementing a plugin mechanism or something where you might not know the name directly. There's also a system called Connect Slots by Name, which is used by the UI designer in order to set up connections between signals and slots with very specific names in your class. And as I mentioned, you can also query anything that inherits from QObject for a host of information about itself and what methods and properties it exposes.
So now we're going to show you what CopperSpice looks like. This is what would be in your header file. This is the translation that Peppermill would make for you. They are macros. It is the way that we're doing it. As C++ evolves, we'll change how this is done. But for right now, it's actually a pretty clean interface, because this is what macros were designed to do, is to solve a problem that is the only way it could be solved. So what you're seeing is the declaration of a signal and a slot. And we're going to go over the slot one a little bit.
As I mentioned, there are different ways to make connections between objects. The first form shows you that this is connecting a string representation of the method to a string representation of the slot. And you can also use method pointers. You also have the option to have the receiver, the slot side of it, be a lambda as well.
And keep in mind that even if you're using the lambda or you're using any of these formats, at the bottom line, it's going to need to go through mock. It's going to need to retrieve the data if there are pass parameters. And again, our way of doing it, we're maintaining the data types.
So when QObject activate is called, this is part of the mechanism of emitting a signal. In our system, activate is a template method. It's called for every signal emission. It compares that signal that's being emitted to the list of existing connections, and when it finds a match, it calls that corresponding slot. As we mentioned, you can have multiple slots connected to a given signal, and this can be very useful in some cases, and queued connections can pass information across threads in a thread-safe, race-free manner.
So as you said, we're going to talk about how the slot declaration works a little bit. And what you can see is we've relisted the slot declarations. We implemented this, and our way of solving this was by using a runtime counter. It also uses a method overloading technique and a constexpr and decaltype. This is information that explains how to do things at compile time, which is what we needed to accomplish to remove mock.
So the basic idea is that in the macro, we want to generate a method called csregister 0 and have it then call the next csregister that may have been created by the next macro. But there's a problem with this mechanism. This isn't valid code.
The 0 and the 1 are integers. They're not a data type. So in terms of method overloading, this doesn't work. And again, the idea is we're going to set up the macros so it defines everything, and then the register process is going to chain. That's what we're showing, is it does something to register. And all this registration isn't going to happen at startup. It's going to happen when the class is instantiated. So this is the problem we stared at. This is what we were looking at, is how do we create csregister as a counter so that it can do something, and then it can tell 0 call 1 and 1 call 2.
It turns out the place to start is with a templated class. As in so many things in C++, templates are the answer. And here we have a templated class that wraps an integer. Note the inheritance relationship. 3 inherits from 2, 2 inherits from 1, 1 inherits from 0. And then we've specialized this at 0 to stop the recursion, because otherwise it would continue infinitely. Now, the other thing that's important to note about this that you may or may not have thought about is that when you instantiate a template with an integer argument, a templated class with an integer argument, you get a unique data type that is distinct from every other integer passed to that templated class. And this is very important for us. Now here, we see what is generated at the top of your class when you use the csObject macro, which is the equivalent to QObject. We're declaring two methods. The first is a templated method that will accept any wrapped integer and do nothing. This will terminate the chain when we get to the end. The next thing we're doing is declaring a non-template method called CSCounter that takes a wrapped zero and returns a wrapped zero. Hold on to that line. We'll use it in a moment.
That's the static const, excuse me, the static const expr. That's what he's referring to on the zero.
Now, suppose that slot declaration that we showed you earlier in the presentation, suppose one was on line 42 and there was another one on line 43. Then the question becomes, following through this code, what is the value of value 42 and what is value 43?
Anyone? Excuse me.
So
we've actually shown the token paste just for reference. So that token paste would have taken that line number and added that. So it really would say value 42 and value 43. Anyone want to take a guess?
Sure.
Yes, from the previous slide, you can see the static const expr.
Is indeed a method declaration. So let's work through this first declaration and unpack it a little bit. When I look at decal type, and specifically an expression decal type, which this is, I look at it as a hypothetical question. If I were to do this thing at this point in this program, what would the data type that I got back be? And the answer to this, the compiler is working through, and it sees, oh, you're trying to call CSCounter with a wrapped 255, because that's the expression we're passing. That's the type of the expression. There is only one declaration of CSCounter in scope at this point. Thus, the compiler looks at the 255. Remember the inheritance relationship we have in our wrapper class. It can substitute the wrapped 255 for a zero. Therefore, it can call our CSCounter method, which returns a wrapped zero. Then we query the wrapper for its value. Therefore, value 42 is zero. Then we go on to declare a new overload of CSCounter. Since value 42 is zero, we are declaring a new version of CSCounter that takes a wrapped one and returns a wrapped one.
So that's a declaration. It becomes another declaration then for one.
So when we go to set up value 43, you note that the declaration of value 42 and value 43 are exactly identical. They have to be because we're generating them from a macro. But when we evaluate value 43, the compiler will find the overload for one because it's slightly closer in the inheritance hierarchy than the overload for zero. Therefore, value 43 is one.
So this is the expanded code to really show what's going on. And again, this is all pre-processed code. There is more code that exists for these in the macros. But again, we just pulled out the relevant parts. I will add that what we're showing here doesn't apply to just reflection. This applies on how to do a runtime counter. So on this line of 42, what we are pointing out is that the CS reg trigger. That's where the registration, that's the method that's going to get called at instantiation. There's some past parameters there. Some of them we've shortened, again, to fit on the slides and to be concise. What's noticeable is the CS trigger down here that is calling the 42 plus 1.
Any question?
Yes? Yes.
So the question was about ODR violation, and that turns out not to be an issue. Because this counter always counts from zero at the start of your class, it's always expanded in lockstep in every translation unit, so you get the same answer everywhere.
Yeah, that's true, but I mean, only the name of the thing,
Value 42 is derived from the line it was on as the token paste.
Yeah, yeah.
So
what I'm telling you is that probably I could have the same class including different files, and in one file it would produce starting from value 42 and in second value 142.
It starts from zero in each class. Mm-hmm. It's based on the line number.
Mm-hmm. And we can we can go over that after mm-hmm. the presentation. So one thing that's interesting to note here is that down at the bottom, when we call CSRegTrigger to chain to the next method, it's able to find a version of CSRegTrigger that hasn't been declared yet. However, up at the top, we absolutely require that the compiler can't see any overload of CSCounter that hasn't been declared yet, because that would be at best recursive and at worst completely useless. So the question is, why does this work?
Why is it that on the value of 42, we only can see above in our class declaration, but then at the bottom on the CSRegTrigger, we can see everything?
And it turns out
the standard has some great ways of resolving this.
It's very specific about when a class is considered complete. Therefore, you can see all of its members that will ever be declared.
A class is always complete once you're at the last curly. We know that.
Many people are familiar with the rule, although they may treat it as a rule of thumb, that you can call methods within the body of an inline method. And indeed, that's one of the other cases between the open curly and the closed curly of an inline method. The class you're in is considered complete. There are two other cases. One of them is after the equals sign that declares the value of a defaulted parameter for a method. And the other one
is the one is we need
is after the equals sign mm-hmm. of the initializer of a non-static const data member. And it is very, very important to us that that line in the standard says non-static. Because as you note at the top of the slide, what we're declaring is a static const data member. And the compiler is not allowed to consider anything below that line when resolving that method declaration because the class is not yet complete.
We are watching closely. We are watching that line very closely. We've also talked with a few people on the standards committee to give us a warning if anything changes. One of the amazing things about some of this code is somebody took the time to look at some of the assembly.
Yes, indeed. And yes, there are actually some fundamental reasons why the standard has to be set up that way. There are some things that you could generate that are contradictions if that weren't true. It's unlikely to change. We will watch it closely. What's really neat about this mechanism is that running this through Clang in particular, my hat's off to the Clang optimization team, because when you run this code through Clang with optimization turned on, what happens is our entire int wrapper is never instantiated. It doesn't exist. Most of the template code here completely disappears, and then it notices that this call to the next CSRegTrigger method is a tail call. So it coalesces all of these registration methods into one larger method, and that's it, you're done. It is a zero overhead registration system.
GCC isn't quite as good on its optimization, but it's still not bad. But again, we were very impressed with what they were able to do with Clang. The code just reads very beautifully, and it's a wonderful, wonderful code to look at.
The versions of GCC we've looked at don't see the tail call, yes, but I suspect the newer versions will.
There was a question in the back.
You can tell me to wait, but I'm curious what triggers the first call to
RegTrigger.
Very good,
it's a good question. The question was
I'll be happy to answer that. The question was, what triggers the very first call to RegTrigger? Mm-hmm. And it turns out there's another class that we haven't talked about in this presentation called QMetaObject, which is the container for all of this information. When you first access the QMetaObject for a specific class, creating that QMetaObject calls the registration trigger methods in that class so that they're set up the moment you ask for information about the class.
No, it's okay. Please feel free.
We depend on, the question was, if we have multiple threads, are there initialization order problems? And the answer is no, because the initialization is of a static. And we depend on the fact that initialization of static variables is thread safe.
If you actually want to take a look at all that generation code, in our CopperSpice source, there is a CS macro file which actually lists, it's about 20 or 30 lines of, there's various other things that are getting initialized that didn't pertain to just showing how the counter worked. So we welcome you to look at that.
So we've talked a little bit about the registration process. This exact process is used for registering all of the various things that we need, signals, slots, properties, invocable methods, and so on. Mm-hmm. We also store a method pointer for the signal and slot methods so that we can find their corresponding code at runtime and match things up.
And currently, in the current version of Qt, you can't use a method pointer as a parameter for the signal or slot. I'm not talking about connect, I'm talking about a signal or a slot. So this is one of the things we've also been able to allow is method pointers for the parameters. Enums were very amazing though. They were very complicated, which we didn't anticipate.
One of the things we've noticed as standards proposals have come in for reflection is they all seem to sort of gloss over the subject of dealing with enums because it's a particularly odd part of the C++ type system, and this is a very difficult part of the registration process. This is one place where improvements from the language would be very, very helpful to us.
So we've really cleaned up a lot of things by removing mock and by adding a new registration system. The syntax, it is different, but internally it's a lot cleaner, and externally, even the macros, they are cleaner, they are separated. If you're familiar with the Qt properties, how they are listed all on one line, one of the things we have done with our properties, again, to deal with the comma issue, is they're on individual. So we have a property, whether it's a read or a write, each one is an individual macro. It actually really does make the code easier to read. And now it means we can use any data type. So whether it's QMap or, and if you're not familiar with QMap, it is very similar to STDMap. And you can use all of these things now, and you're not restricted. We've removed some of the corner cases. We're currently in the process of changing the containers. The containers have some issues. And what we're aiming to do is to add thin wrappers around STL, because we feel like that's where a lot of the work has been done.
There are a lot of benefits to this. One of them is that we will get support for reverse iterators for free, which has been missing in Qt for some time. There are interesting problems with the implementation of some of the containers in Qt, and one of the problems that they've acknowledged is QList has some major performance issues in some cases, and they recommend not using it at all. This is unfortunately impossible because there are so many methods in the API itself that return or take a QList parameter of varying types.
We have been reading much of this on the Qt dev forums. They are actually, there was a very long thread on the stability of using QList, and it is a performance issue. They have actually flat out said, please don't use it. And again, the problem is it's used internally, and it's used as return types for other data, for other members.
And I'd be happy to go over the technical issues with you after the talk. It has to do with data types that aren't correctly handled as the values inside QList, and you get horrible performance implications in certain cases.
It is something they're looking at improving, there's no question. Our solution for improving it is to use the STL. That is our approach, is let's leverage what we have in STL. One of the things that we've already added to CopperSpice, and again, this came from our work on DoxyPress. We had a need where we needed to do some sorting. We were sitting there kind of staring. We do tandem programming as tandem work. We were baffled. How are we going to do this sorting? We needed to do some case insensitive work. Then it occurred to us, we have CopperSpice, which we use in DoxyPress. Why don't we just change the library? It was a novel idea. So we went in and we changed QMap. We added the third parameter, the templated optional parameter that STL has for sorting. It was brought to our attention that maybe there were other ways to do this. One of the problems was if you change QString,
the recommended solution for this, if you have a map that you would like sorted differently, if you look in the Qt mailing lists, the recommended solution is to override the comparison operator for that data type. But that, of course, affects every associative container that has keys of that data type in your program. We had one particular container that we wanted optionally to be case insensitive. So we had to have a comparator that was specific for that container and that had state.
We didn't want to change how QString worked. We wanted to just add something to it. It didn't take long. We had a few issues that we had to work out. Everybody has some debugging. But within a day, we had this added. So now QMap works better. We feel like this is a great direction for the project to be going.
Oh,
yes,
sir.
A question.
The cool thing about STD map is that it doesn't invalidate iterators you don't explicitly delete. So you can easily just copy iterators of all of the members you care about into a vector and standard sort it with a different.
Yes.
So the question was about the iterator invalidation semantics of STDMap and how they're superior to the, I believe, unspecified iterator invalidation semantics of most of the container classes. And obviously, that's another thing we'll get for free once we finish wrapping all of the STL classes inside Copperspice. That's another area where I think we'll get a lot of improvement in terms of the STL working group has put an incredible amount of work into properly specifying all the behavior of all the containers in various places. It may be that QMap has the same iterator invalidation semantics as STDMap, but I couldn't find any documentation on that either.
So we are looking for how much we are going to gain, and this is a direction we're going. It's not a direction they want, and I commend that absolutely. They're going to be improving how their containers work. Our choice, which is why Copperspice is going a completely different direction, we want to leverage STL as much as we can. And we want to make sure that we're dealing with the exception safety problems that we've seen come up. They're only in a few places, but we want to, again, make sure that we're doing things that conform to C++. So a C++ programmer who is used to STL, used to what they've seen, that they don't have to worry about the things they can and they can't use when they're using Copperspice.
So along those lines, some of our future plans for the direction we want to take Copperspice is to make the threading library that's in it just a thin wrapper around the C++ 11 threading library now that there is one.
And we have backported several classes from Qt 5 already. Our intention is to backport what other users want us to do. We can't just cherry pick it by hand. It has to be done. We actually have to look at the code and move everything. It's not an automated process, but it's definitely not impossible. And we're more than available to bring anything from 5 that we would need in Copperspice.
We also want to make Copperspice play a little more nicely with smart pointers. And this is relevant because the Q object system has a memory management model, which is based on parent is the owner of all of its children, which is perfectly fine and well-defined, but it's kind of surprising for modern native C++ programmers who are looking at a library. It feels a little old school. And there are cases where it's very hard to make that memory management model work in a modern C++ 11 program that's using smart pointers heavily in other parts of the code. So we'd like to simplify the interaction and reduce some of that friction between the two memory management models. There is also a significant area that we can believe we can improve in QVariant. QVariant is somewhat similar to the boost any type. It's a container of a single value of unpredictable type. And the way it's implemented, there is a lot of room to do the kinds of things that we've been doing to bring it up to the C++ 11 standard and take advantage of features that would make it more efficient.
We currently don't have Android support. It is something we're going to be working on. Our approach to doing Android support is going to be different of not using the SDK, but using the NDK. So we're going to be taking a different approach. It is in the pipeline of what we're working on.
We've also had several requests from people for something we hadn't anticipated, which is, can you take the thread crossing signal delivery model that you have and extract that out as a separate library? And that's something we're actively looking into. We didn't anticipate that there would be a lot of people interested in this outside the GUI community, but in hindsight, it seems like a utility that would be quite useful to many people in many problem domains.
We've actually been asked by a professor to do this so he can teach it in his college courses. And he doesn't want to teach something like an entire GUI library. He just wants to teach signals and slots. So the request is just to pare everything down, a standalone library that just shows signals and slots. And he feels very passionate that this would be a great computer science course. So this is something that we think we're going to do for him, and it sounds like a great adventure.
And this last one should probably be listed first, because it's probably the one that's going to happen next. As mentioned, we have a contributor who's contributing CMake files, and so we want to add CMake Ninja as a fully supported, tier one support build system for Copperspace.
If you're not familiar with Ninja, I would suggest you take a look at it. We ended up needing to work with CMake and Ninja compiling libclang on Windows using GCC. It sounds like a very strange approach, but this is what we needed to do for DoxyPress, so we can use libclang as our parser for DoxyPress. And again, we can't use Visual Studio at this point. And it was a very complicated process. If anybody is interested in how to do this compiling, it is on our website as well. We're inviting developers to join us. We're inviting people to submit things that they would like to see in Copperspace. Tell us the direction that you'd like to see us go. That's how some of this started, on doing a signal and slot library as a standalone. We're very open for contributors to be part of the project. We're also excited about users. Download Copperspace, start using it, run Peppermill, or just start using it directly with any C++ application that you have.
Our goal is that you can take an existing C++ application that does not currently have a GUI, and without too much impedance mismatch, add a GUI on top of it. So that's another use case that we're interested in hearing from, if there are any pain points along that process. Also, as I said, we really encourage you to try out Copperspace for whatever you have available in your problem domain. It's available right now. All the code is up on GitHub. We have downloads available on our website, pre-built binaries for many platforms. It's fully supported on Linux, several Fedora, Debian, Ubuntu, and the OS 10, 10.7 or better, and Windows going way back.
Way back. I still like to use XP occasionally. I will freely admit to that. So that's our lowest common denominator is XP, but we have a CI machine that's doing Vista and all the way through up on Windows. That's my area that I like, is the Windows arena.
And we have a contributor in the open source community who is helping us. We expect to have FreeBSD and Dragonfly BSD soon.
He's actually one of the maintainers of Dragonfly, and it was very interesting. Somebody in Spain and had a free weekend and made some suggestions. So for anybody on Dragonfly, we should be able to support that very soon. One of the things I put together was, everybody likes to see a demo, but what we don't like is to make 10 different demos. So we produce Kitchen Sink. It is one application. Source and binaries are available. These are just some of the things. There's actually 30 demos with inside of Kitchen Sink. And that should keep you entertained. It was very exciting the first time we were running from one of the Windows machines to through the CI machines. We went around the office in about four different machines to get phone on working and music played. That was quite exciting. It would have been easier to just go to the internet and turn something on. But this was a very interesting experience to see how many machines we could bounce to and music played. And that's actually our first test that we like with Kitchen Sink. Yes. Oh, sorry. It's okay. Yes.
Do you have
Yes.
The question is about is the CI something that's available open source easily to replicate? Sure.
We would love for somebody to do Raspberry Pi.
We certainly want help from the open source community. Talk to us after the presentation. We'll be happy to give you some information about that. It's not currently something that's available for cloning, but that's a great idea.
It is a very good idea. And Copper Spice is available on GitHub. We are putting, DoxyPress was only actually officially released about a month ago, and the source for DoxyPress will be on GitHub sometime in the next few days. We wanted to wait on that.
So the other question I have
yes.
You mentioned you're looking at support for shared pointers and changing perhaps the way that the parent child relationship is. Is that something that would replace or be an option to in addition to just an alternative?
Okay,
excellent question.
The question is about when we add the ability to deal with shared pointers, is that going to replace the current object model or just add additional functionality to it? That's still an R&D effort. We believe there's a way to interoperate with shared pointers while maintaining the old semantics for code that didn't use shared pointers. And that's obviously the best of both worlds. That there's still some corner cases there to be worked out.
Mac App Store, not the place to go right now. Okay.
No, they're great.
Mac. Okay, now Mac is great. I like that too.
We
have to decide who does the Mac work. He is the Linux person. I'm the Windows. We flip a coin on Mac. Yes.
Something to think about. But for specifically the Mac App Store builds, because they verify everything of sandbox behavior, there was actually a delay in the kernel event, because you know Mac has their own GUI layer. There's actually a delay in sending back the event.
If you're finding certain delays like this, we would absolutely love if you could produce some sample code that we could test and work with you on this to make sure that gets resolved.
Yeah.
That would be definitely...
So the solution, by the way, is that we had to keep our own static pointer for that.
Okay.
A stack-based object.
Okay.
Could be too late.
Please feel free to send us email and let us know so that we know exactly what's going on, so that we make sure that we test a case. I just wanted to finish this slide really quickly, and then we'll take a few more questions. Again, we've told you about Copper Spice and Peppermill and Kitchen Sink. Diamond, before we started the project, I decided I needed a new editor. Being on Windows, I was using Crimson, which goes way back, and Crimson is very obsolete at this point. Diamond was a way to see if I could replicate what was in Crimson, and I have. Diamond actually turned out to be a lifesaver as an editor. It's a very lightweight editor. It's not an Emacs, it's not a VI. It's just a nice lightweight editor. It doesn't solve every single problem, but it's very small. And yes, being in Copper Spice, it's on every platform. The very nice thing is when we were doing some of the debugging, we were looking at each other going, wow, could we actually like change syntax highlighting? We own the source code. Yes, we can. So this saved us many times for debugging. And it is nice when you have the source code. It's all open source. And if you'd like to contribute something, Diamond does have all the things you would expect, spell check, highlighting. And if you're not familiar with what Copper Spice can do, it's also another great demo program to take a look at. And again, if you're not familiar with what we've been saying on DoxyPress and the DoxyPress app, we invite you to take a look at that, just in case you happen to have been using Doxygen. We have a replacement.
And you can find that talk if you weren't in it. I'm sure it will be up on YouTube shortly.
Mm-hmm. This is our website. It's actually copperspice.com.org.net.info. We took them all. Copper Spice, because people had asked where we got the name. Basically, Ansel wanted something that was easy to do a search on Google. That's where part of the name came from. As you can tell by kitchen sink and peppermill, we like to cook and like to eat, so everything kind of was food-based. Kind of doesn't surprise programmers we would do that. If you look internal to our product, you're going to find spice jars and bento boxes. So we got a little carried away. So everything has to be food-based. I think a product should have a theme, which makes it quite entertaining and interesting. But basically, it is something you can remember. It's two words put together, which is a great way to name a product. We're available. We check email, as does everybody. We're very available to work with. And we're looking to increase our team. We have some beta testers. Everybody seems to be spread out. We have people all over the world. We're looking for some US-based people. That would be fun, too. And we welcome you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes. The licensing.
Oh, very good question.
Very good.
The question was, we're looking for users. What is the licensing for those potential users? We are bound by the license that we received the Qt source code under. So the license of Copper Spice is GPL and LGPL, dual license.
We are maintaining that. If something ever changes, which there's some strange scenario where licensing could change, and if that does, and if it does go BSD, that is something we would incorporate, but the chances of that aren't very likely. That's the only reason why we have a CLA. Our CLA basically says, if the Qt project ever takes it BSD, Copper Spice goes BSD as well. Just a little safety so that we can do that, but we are GPL and LGPL. Yes.
This is a bit of a follow-up question to that.
Yes.
But it also ties in with something you mentioned in terms of future plans, which was separating out the signals and slots library.
Yes.
I know that's a pattern that I've seen in a number of other code bases. A lot of similar systems in some game engines.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like a lot of people sort of re-implement that sort of again and again and again and again.
We would like to. We unfortunately can't go BSD.
Well,
at this point.
That's a good question.
Yes.
Depending upon how much of the signal slot library, a signal slot library on its own isn't really dealing with reflection. It's more about getting data from one thread to another. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that if we were able to implement that in a way that was all new work, we could potentially mm-hmm. change the licensing on that. It's not obvious that there's actually a lot of code commonality there because there's so much more to a signal or a slot in a more rich meta information system mm-hmm. that we have to support for the GUI layer. So it's quite possible.
Oh.
What was that?
Have the extra info be a trait.
Interesting. We've just been approached this week with doing this library, so it's just a couple days old, and it's like, fantastic idea, especially being taught at the education level. Yes.
So I'm not personally a GUI programmer, and that's, I would like to ask what's a GUI programmer can have problems with moving from Qt or something.
What problems would a Qt person have moving over? The program.
Not much. Our mission statement is as API compatible to Qt as possible, while still being fully C++ 11. So there's a little difference in the way that the signals and the slots are declared, as you saw, and we have the translator system to do that. There's also a few changes in the meta object system itself. There are a few methods that had to change. So if you're a heavy user of the Qt meta object system, some of the calls might be slightly different. For example, there's some methods that have to return a reference instead of a pointer for various reasons and things like that. However, if you're not heavily in the guts of the meta object mm-hmm. system, the API is 99.9% compatible.
But we've also removed some of the restrictions. Not that many people need 10 parameters on going from a signal to a slot, but I have heard that some people do use more than 10 parameters. We don't have a limitation now because of the fact that everything is variadic templates. So there's more restrictions removed.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Yes.
So, are you having any plans to support QML?
This is an excellent. The question was, are we going to support QML? And the answer is yes. We have concentrated a lot of our work on the widgets because that's where I am on my desktop applications. But we are really looking at how to do QML. We're going to do it though by changing some of the underlining classes mm-hmm. in Paint.
Yeah, there's the QML design is really interesting in a lot of ways. One of the things that's unfortunate about QML is the fact that it's very difficult to write a good UI designer for in the way that it's implemented. And we have some ideas of ways that we could possibly simplify a few things and make that possible to have a nice GUI designer for applications that need to use that declarative style interface. I mean, in theory, a declarative interface specification should be really easy to have a nice graphical representation in a drag and drop UI editor. And
there was a lot of stuff we've seen on the dev forums asking on QML from C++ people of saying, why can't I just write this code as C++? Why do I have to do it in other formats? And we were scratching our heads going, no, it should be done this way. And I think that makes sense. There was some problems with publishing the API and some issues with it. We want to make sure that a C++ programmer doesn't have to use a GUI designer. He doesn't like GUI designers. I'm okay with them. But if he's going to do QML, he should be able to just write the code.
Yeah, that was one of the other yes. issues that I was going to mention is that in the QML world, C++ programmers are somewhat of a second-class citizen yes. because you have to bind into the runtime system that the QML engine is running in. And that's really unfortunate because really nice, fast, declarative user interfaces are valuable to everybody, not mm-hmm. C++ programmers included. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we're looking at doing as well. Yes, sir.
Yes.
So in debugging the signal to slots is challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Figuring out what's connected to what and what challenge. How has that seen changed with your implementation?
So the question was about debugging a complex program with signal and slot interconnections.
Well, one of the things we've added is a lot more static type checking because we don't lose the data types. So that is one of the ways of which we've helped is we can put up better error messages. And some of those error messages are still you still have to go back, obviously, and look at your code and decipher. But we have changed a lot of the messages that come up because, again, we can do this at compile time.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of static mm-hmm. asserts in our implementation mm-hmm. of connect to the point where if you make a connection not using the string-based syntax, mm-hmm. you will never get a runtime connection failure.
In Copperspace.
It is yeah. not possible. Every single possible runtime connection failure will be caught at compile time, which is quite helpful. Now, in terms of debugging the graph of objects that you have in your program that are connected to each other, we have no specific advantage there in terms of being able to figure out, you know, where you might have a missed connection, but or too many connections for that matter. But the hope is that as you get more and more static compile time checking, the need for runtime debugging of that becomes less urgent. That is very true. That's true. If you're actually debugging into the machinery mm-hmm. of emitting a signal, the code is easier for GDB mm-hmm. to understand because it has the type information from the debug info.
There's a question back over here. Yes. Oh. Yes, you. it's okay.
So this week, you know, big thing, core guidelines, you know, the lifetime support, all that stuff. Do you foresee, I know like you're trying to really closely follow it, seeing standards. Is there a way that, you know, we can kind of incorporate this into standards C++ code without kind of really tricking all these like checkers for bounds and lifetimes and stuff like that, so that they don't look at this and they're like, oh gosh, what's going on? Because I know we're passing point pointers around that.
Repeating the question is.
So the question was, how does this relate to some of the core guidelines and libraries that Struthstrip and others were talking about during this conference? And I mean, one of the places that we want to get to, and we're not quite there yet, but we're on the way, is there are much fewer raw pointers in the code, period. There are, I believe, no void stars left anywhere in the code. And so it's a lot easier for the compiler to reason about it. I mean, anytime the compiler sees a void star, it has to assume that could alias anything anywhere. And certainly any static analysis tool is going to either throw its hands up and say, I can't understand this code, or throw its hands up and say, this code is horrible. You're going to get one or the other.
Yeah. And the void star was the problem with passing method pointers in between signals and slots, again, at the parameter level. And removing the void stars, that was very important because it's not pretty code.
So definitely the hope would be we'd get a lot closer to a place that static analysis tools would be able to understand. For example, you know, our signal slot delivery mechanism has type information through the whole chain, so there's no place where you have to reinterpret cast anything. It's a lot easier to reason about.
And we keep running this on Clang, the static analyzers and everything we can find. You know, this has been a process over the past couple of years of making it better. And we're definitely on the road, but there's still a lot of room for improvement, which we had to put out the forest fires first. That was our idea and stuff. Yes. Yes.
And when I saw the iteration macros for the signals and slots, I immediately thought that you could use a variadic macro to avoid the _1_2. And then I thought we can bring it one step further and we can actually list all the signals and all the slots inside of a variadic macro so that you would actually get the indices of the signals and slots at preprocessing time without the need of having the template from steps counter. So have you thought about it? Is it
The question was, how do we simplify our macro processing? And the syntax?
Probably using a functional like programming style with preprocessor macros, you can actually avoid all the CT int counter stuff because you can actually get the index for every argument passed from the single macro.
And so there is a way, if you were able to get all of the things that needed reflection into a single macro call, then you could potentially walk through that list of arguments and not need the compile time counter. And that is true. That becomes syntactically very hard to work with. And one of the reasons is because if you're translating existing source code, the signals and slots are not necessarily contiguous. There's nothing that says they have to be. It places a lot of restrictions on how you lay out your class. The other problem is that although you cannot supply an implementation for a signal because it's a thing that you're setting up to emit information and we have to hook into that, you can supply an inline implementation for a slot, and we need to be able to support that. That would get syntactically horrific if you were putting those as arguments to one single macro.
So. We have generated some testing, and in some of our testing of signals and slots, it got very messy between pointers to this. There were more parentheses than I knew you could put in an inline. And again, to make sure that it could parse. And more stars and ampersands than should probably be in an inline. It wasn't pretty code, but it was to test it and make sure that everything going through the macro system and that it came out. And that one was actually called Ginger. So we stayed with food.
I'm certainly not saying that there isn't room
for improvement. Yeah.
But this certainly, what we've showed you today, is not the first syntax that we had. This went through several refinements to get to this point, and we found it was a reasonable compromise between several of the design constraints that end up guiding the design.
One of the concerns we did have, which sounds unusual, but since we're working with people on different platforms, I would put on my Windows hat, he would put on his Linux hat. We looked at the macros, and I'm like, you do that, and no Windows programmer will ever use it. And then he's like vetoing ones that I had. So we did try to make macros that would at least syntactically work for both Linux, Mac, and Windows people, and that it would be a compromise. Which again, we're open to suggestions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, sorry. Yes.
Is it possible to connect signals to signals?
Yeah. The question is it possible to connect signals to signals? And yes, everything works with that exactly the way that it did. Yeah. You had a question?
Yes.
So you're rethinking GUI, you're maybe gonna break out signals and slots as mm-hmm. a separate library. As an implementation detail, you've got expression spin-A in there.
Yes.
Well, if concepts shows up, and you're kind of rethinking GUI, is concepts something that would be interesting or useful in kind of this direction? Or no, it's an implementation detail, it doesn't matter.
The question is, how would concepts work with Copper Spice?
And could we take advantage of it?
We've actually had some conversations with somebody who's working on concepts. Since the implementation and the design isn't as well known, it's really hard to comment on that and to figure out how to take Copper Spice to work with concepts yet. I mean, as that gets more solidified, possibly, but I'm not sure.
But I think part of the answer is since as we make Copper Spice more template-y, it will become more obvious where concepts would have been useful. There are some things which could have been solved with templates but weren't, so it's not clear how you would apply concepts to them until you refactor that code. And
yes. Okay, so thank you very much. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.